by Mr. Jonathan Starr from Scenario Insight. He's been working with the core team on this project for, since its inception. He does a fabulous job, so I'd like you to pay attention to him and not me. That would be great. And with that, Mr. Starr, take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, everyone. As Mr. Chairman has said, I've been facilitating and guiding a core team in this process of scenario planning, East Coast climate change scenario planning, over the course of the last year. And the core team is made up of individuals from the organizations you see on the right-hand side of the screen there. I also want to thank Council for time on the agenda to discuss this, and particularly for many of you who've been involved in various aspects of this scenario planning over the course of the last year, whether through in-person workshops, webinars, or working sessions. So thank you for all your input so far. So this session and the initiative in general is a chance to look ahead and think ahead. There is no doubt that most of your time obviously has to be spent on the pressing issues of the day, and of course that's justifiable, but also it's worthwhile at times taking a step back and thinking about what the challenges for fishery management might be, not just next year, but in 10 years' time or 20 years' time, or even longer than that. And that's really the purpose of the exercise that we're going through here, is just kind of taking that step back. Now, having said that, even though we might have a lens of 20 years into the future, that doesn't mean that ideas and actions that emerge from this, we have 20 years to put them in place. Even though we're thinking 20 years ahead, the actions that emerge from conversations like this are usually things that need to be done much more urgently, or i.e. yesterday. So please bear in mind that even though this is a scenario planning exercise, the outputs of these exercises usually mean that we're looking for ways in which we can change to make sure that we're prepared for the future. Now, so we're looking ahead, thinking about the future, and then figuring out what we need to do to prepare for that. That sounds relatively straightforward, but of course, it never is for so many different reasons. And one of the main reasons is that we can't predict the future. We don't know what's likely to play out. We don't know in exact ways what is going to play out, especially in an era of climate change. And that's the reason why we've engaged in a process of scenario planning. And so scenarios, we heard reference to scenarios in the presentation just gone. I'm going to talk here about scenarios that are much more of a qualitative nature rather than quantitative. These are scenarios that are stories about the ways in which conditions, the ways in which the world might turn out tomorrow. And the reason why we create these scenarios is in order that those kind of provocative stories about what might happen then allow groups to think about the future in new ways and ultimately, if justifiable, change the minds and actions of a group of people. So the reason why we're doing scenarios is we cannot predict the future, and we realize that there is uncertainty around over the course of the next 10 or 20 years, particularly when it comes to climate change and what that means for fisheries management. So with that in mind, specifically the objectives of this exercise, this initiative, are to explore how East Coast fishery governance and management issues are going to be affected by climate change driven in climate change in fisheries, particularly kind of paying attention to changing stock availability and distribution. And as a result of that exploration, the purpose then is to think about what are the sets of tools and processes that we as fishery managers in this council and in other councils up and down the East Coast should be providing to ensure flexible and robust fishery management strategies. So this is both an exploration process, but it is also a process where we're going to end up with tools and ideas and potential actions to take forward because we realize the change may well be needed to prepare for the future. So just quickly on steps, as I mentioned, this project has been going for over a year or so. We're well into it, and we're really at a very important and critical stage. In many ways, this is the business end of the process. We've spent many months exploring the future, thinking about different possible ways in which things may play out. We've scoped this out. We've explored the forces that are driving change. We then conducted a significant in-person workshop back in June, where we created a set of scenarios that we will be discussing briefly today. But today is really very much in the heart of what I'm going to call the application phase. We apply the scenarios that we created to try and identify actions, potential actions, possible recommendations for changes that might happen to fisheries management. Specifically in terms of applications, there have been three elements to this work, and it effectively goes from the fall of 2022 into winter, early spring of 23. Firstly, after we created the scenarios last summer, we held a series of managers' meetings, and those managers' meetings, the purpose of that was to use the scenarios and then generate ideas to think about what needs to change or what potentially could change to make fishery management more prepared for a changing future. You had the result of those managers' meetings summarized and provided in terms of a document that you had in your briefing materials. This stage that we're at right now is a series of council and commission meetings. We started with the commission meeting back in November, and now we're in the midst of a series of three council conversations. South Atlantic was earlier this week, today New England, Mid-Atlantic next week. The purpose of these conversations is to review the ideas in the management discussions and then to generate further ideas and potentially to prioritize. And then the final part of this application phase is a summit meeting that we're going to be holding in mid-February, and that's where representatives from each of the councils and commission selected representatives are getting together to review all the material that has been discussed and then prioritize potential actions for then taking forward. And so we're really very much in the heart of this application phase right now. So I want to do four things in our conversation today, and each of those is going to have a kind of slightly different feel to the conversation. The first thing we'll do is to give you a chance to review the scenarios that paint these four different pictures of what 2042, 20 years out, might be like and the conditions the fishery managers may well be facing. I know many of you have been involved in the creation of these. You will have seen them, and so we'll spend a short amount of time reviewing them. I then want to give council members a chance to comment on the managers' summaries. So comment on the challenges and opportunities and potential actions that were generated by these managers' meetings that I've mentioned. So we'll get a chance to do that. Also in that managers' summary, we identified a series of what I'm going to call cross-cutting issues. And so we want to try and get you as a council to discuss the most important issues that you feel fishery managers need to prepare for and what this council needs to prepare for as climate change continues. And then finally, I want to, based on all of those three earlier conversations, I want to get us to identify the specifics of the discussions that you feel, from the perspective of your council, should be on the agenda at the February summit meeting. And so these are the four objectives and desired outcomes from the conversation that we'd like to have today. Okay, so I'm going to spend the next short amount of time just briefly reviewing the scenarios that were created in a workshop in June and then subsequently developed and deepened by many of you in subsequent conversations. First off, just a reminder for many of you, scenarios are based on uncertainty, and therefore what we're trying to do is to try and identify, as we think 20 years into the future, what are the factors that are likely to be most important in affecting the environment for fisheries management, but then also factors that we feel are also not, we're not confident, it's not predetermined which way they're going to go. Essentially, they're uncertain. And we define these in basically in terms of axes. So you, as you can see here, on the horizontal axis, we have one uncertainty that is basically in the next 20 years, how predictable are conditions going to be in an era of climate change? And as a result of that predictability of conditions, how well will we feel that science is able to assess ocean conditions, assess stock conditions, and so on? On the one hand, maybe we're in a future where conditions are highly unpredictable, and that means science basically has a low ability to assess and predict what's going on. That's a possibility. But maybe in 20 years, what we find is that conditions become maybe a little more predictable, or that science has developed in a way that allows us, as fishery managers and more generally people assessing the oceans, that we have a higher ability to assess and predict what's going on. So that's an uncertainty that is denoted here by the horizontal axis. The other uncertainty that we built the scenarios around was really around what's the impact of climate change on stock production. How resilient are stocks? Will we see that in aggregate, stocks over the next 20 years are mostly maintained, and that's the upper end of the axis? Or will we see, thanks to climate change, will we see that stocks are mostly declining? Now, stock production could be a factor of a number of different things, including habitats and so on as well. So the uncertainty here is what happens to stocks in aggregate. Of course, we're going to see individual differences according to individual species and so on, but in aggregate, are we imagining a future where stocks are maintained or that they're declining? In addition to the matrix, we also identified that clearly some things are predictable. And so when we created these scenarios, we identified a number of things that we would call kind of common features or predetermined elements. These are applicable in all scenarios. We believe that ocean temperatures are going to continue to warm, and that in turn is going to affect marine species biology and distribution. And really, it's the kind of heart of the challenge that we're seeing here. We also acknowledge that there's going to be regional differences in seasonal temperature changes and regional differences in primary production changes as well. So we can't assume that there is going to be any kind of uniform change happening up and down the East Coast. We acknowledge that there will be regional differences. Sea levels are, we're predicting and confident will rise over this period. And also changing ocean uses will create more competition for fisheries. In addition, coastal populations are expected to grow. So these, let's call them common factors or predictable elements, are going to be an important aspect of what happens in the future. So you put our basic matrix together with these common factors, and we created these four stories. I mentioned earlier they're qualitative rather than quantitative, but they are four stories that describe different aspects of what we might imagine happening in future. I won't go through them each now simply as we kind of look at this matrix, simply because we're going to go into detail about each of them, and I'll ask anyone for any comments on these as we go through. So as you can see kind of quickly there, upper left, we called it ocean pioneers, a world where stocks are mostly maintained, but there are unpredictable changes and science provides a low ability to assess. Compound stress fractures, a tricky scenario, unpredictable changes and stocks mostly declining. Sweet and sour, a world where stocks are mostly declining, but the science is good because we have relatively predictable changes and science is enhanced in that way. And then top right, mostly maintained stocks, but then predictable changes in terms of conditions and a high ability of science to assess. So hopefully that's given you a kind of very quick run through the process that we've gone through, and then also the core matrix that we're working with here. As I say, we're in the application stage, and so the idea is we use this matrix now to try and identify ideas and possible ways in which we can imagine fishery management, what the challenges are, what the opportunities are, and what some of the potential actions are that are going to be needed as we think about change in the future. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to go and go through each of these scenarios in turn and ask for any specific reactions to the stories that we're going to pose. Maybe before I'll do that, I'll see whether anyone has any questions about the process that we've undertaken here or anything that I've explained in the first opening slides. Thank you.
Hey, very good, Mr. Starr. Any questions from the council so far? Mr. Smith,
over there. Yeah, thanks. Just a quick one on the central axis there on stock productivity and replacement. We have stocks either mostly maintained or mostly declining. So as we think about this through the scenarios, is it the stocks that the New England Fisheries Management Council currently manages are mostly maintained or declined? Because I imagine the scenario is, or there's going to be more of some and less of some others, and I don't know where that fits on your axis there. So are we thinking about this through the lens of what we manage now in New England, or how do we think that through?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Our assumption is that obviously this is an axis that describes something a little more general than that. So we're you can make some assumptions about. I know you manage a number of different species. You would think within that, yeah, the chances are that most of those are probably being maintained, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to assume that they're all increasing or maintained. In general, you might well find that they're, that on balance, let's say, that most of the species that you are responsible for managing are effectively relatively healthy in the two upper scenarios. As compared to the lower scenarios. But obviously what we're trying to do here is this is a matrix that is trying to apply generally across the East Coast rather than something that is specific to New England right now.
Mr. Tracy.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just want to make a comment. You know, some of us were just at the CMOD in Denver on ecosystem-based fisheries management. And I just want to comment, and I think it's relevant, you know, bringing some of that into the conversation, that this is EBFM. I mean, obviously, once you cross over into specific changes to management is where you really, but I just think it's helpful for us that we're there to kind of tie it together. Obviously, we're going to be presenting tomorrow on our EBFM committee and talking about the work we're doing versus what other councils are doing. But I just think it's important to flag at the outset, hey, this is what a lot of other councils are doing. This is their EBFM, is to incorporate, I think, what we're going to talk about here, just the concepts. We're doing a very aggressive thing with Georges Bank. You know, that's what we're working on, which we'll talk about. But anyway, I just want to make that point.
Well, Mr. Salerno. Okay, anyone else from the council? I mean, this is primarily a discussion for the council, informational session from the council, but every once in a while I'm going to go to the public. Anybody from the public have any questions? Seeing none, before I go back to Mr. Starr, I do want to mention that Ms. Bachman is our staffer on the core team, and thank you for that, Michelle. Mr. Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm going to go through each of these relatively briefly. Hopefully you've had a chance to take a look at the briefing materials here. So I'm going to describe each of the scenarios in turn. Remember, what we're doing here is imagining situations that may play out, combinations of circumstances that may play out 20 years into the future. The first scenario we called Ocean Pioneers. So remember, this is that top left-hand world where stocks are mostly maintained, but we've also got a lot of surprises going on, and it's tricky to really understand what's happening. So we're described as this world of being crazy ocean conditions, weird weather, but you've got ocean stocks generally being resilient. There's no particularly damaging climate tipping points that we're hitting thresholds here. The seasons and locations of traditional fisheries change unpredictably, maybe even more unpredictably than maybe we experience right now. And stock assessments, the traditional kind of stock assessments we see, are probably less reliable in a world like this. up-to-date information, real-time data from vessels and other users emerges as more valuable in this kind of world, simply because things are changing that much more quickly than maybe we've experienced before. As befits the title of this one, ocean activity, whether that fishing, aquaculture, offshore wind, dominated by entrepreneurs, technology pioneers, new players coming into this mix as the ocean gets busier, but also more unpredictable. Winners having deep pockets, sharp elbows, capital intensity being very, very, very a big part of this, new technology and a willingness to take risks. Overall, with the fact that stocks are maintained, maybe there's some uncertainty with players here as to how long abundant stocks can keep delivering, given the environmental shocks that we're seeing in a world like this. So Ocean Pioneers is our first scenario. And what I'm going to do is ask for any comments about the scenario itself, and then we'll run through each of these again, talking more specifically about the kind of management actions. So first off, any comments about the scenario itself, or any questions, or indeed anything that needs either clarification or things that you want to add to this storyline? Thank you.
To the council. Now, I know a bunch of you have already been in the game here, so I don't want you to sit on your hands. So, Mr. Salerno.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm kind of perusing through these descriptions, and it seems like we're talking about what we're dealing with now. And I think it seems to be maybe I'm missing it, but there seems to be something missing, that we may have things coming into our region that may or may not be addressed in here. And I'm just curious, am I missing that, or was that kind of not in there, or is it there and I'm just missing? I'm just curious. New species coming into our region, basically.
I would expect that to be, seasons and locations of traditional fisheries changing unpredictably would include new species coming into our region. So it's not just a kind of a disappearance. And particularly, of course, if we're in the upper quadrants here, the chances are with this being where we're seeing in general stocks maintained or increasing, the chances are you're going to get new stocks, you know, whatever region you're in a world like this. And you might be surprised by them. Yes.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, I'm going to give you a pass this time. Next time, I'm just going to pick on you and call your name out of the hat. So this, you can look forward to that. Mr. Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This one usually doesn't get any response. People are stunned into silence with compound stress fractures. So in this world, we've kept the idea that there are many sort of surprises. There's a lot of environmental uncertainty. And as a result of that, we struggle with scientific assessments. We struggle with trying to understand and particularly predict ocean conditions in future. In addition to that, those factors have also coincided or caused a number of declines in important stocks, important species, and so on. So compound stress fractures really does represent, I think, a more troubling set of conditions. Negative impacts to marine species. We also talked in this world about more pollution affecting estuaries and nearshore habitats, water pollution and so on being a much more significant factor here. Marine heat waves and diseases are likely to be much more prevalent in a world like compound stress fractures. Low abundance in traditional stocks mean that harvest opportunities fall. Chances are costs are likely to rise in a world like this. And then operators are forced in many ways to shift effort to lower trophic level species simply because of the kind of the low abundance of traditional stocks. Science is unable to help. Stock assessments, you know, relying on insufficient data in a world like this. And it causes a good deal of kind of atrophying of trust. There's low levels of trust between different stakeholder groups if we imagine a world like compound stress fractures playing out. This is troubling in a way. You imagine that government, you could tell a story of government stepping in to kind of save a few domestic fisheries here, but by no means all. And then, of course, we've also assumed that other ocean activity continues, and so fishing may no longer be the dominant activity in the ocean, competing with other industries for space and attention. So again, a question to all of you as we describe this one. Anything that you want to either comment on, react to, add to this as an element of the storyline, just for either clarification or development purposes? Thank you.
Mr. Tracy.
Yeah, unfortunately, it sounds kind of similar sometimes to, our, just, to what we got going on. But I would add, you know, maybe generally some of these is just management gridlock, is that the management system that we have has evolved in a different world, and we just get into this gridlock where we just don't have the tools to address what we're seeing. That would be a thought.
Okay. Mr. Pentney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think, you know, one thing that strikes me for this one and the previous one, actually, related to the science and the uncertainty, you know, around the stock assessments is, you know, an aspect of the science being behind the times, if you will. So, you know, given the uncertainty and the statement, you know, insufficient data for good stock assessments, the industry might be seeing low abundance, you know, it says low abundance of traditional stocks, and the assessments haven't caught up to that yet. So we might be getting catch advice that's inconsistent with the true condition of the stocks. And I think that, that could apply both in this one where the stocks are low, and as well as the previous one where maybe stocks are actually quite healthy, but the inability of science and the uncertainties associated with the science are not giving us the assessments that you know, that allow us to act on those abundant stocks, similar to some circumstances we have today. And if I can just touch back to the previous scenario, because as I was thinking about this, what also occurred to me is another aspect of this scenario may be, you know, if we're talking about healthy stocks that we haven't seen before, there may be stocks that are moving into our waters that are quite healthy that we're not even assessing because they're not traditional New England, Northeast stocks. So we need to be, you know, as we move forward in this process, thinking about what happens when what the industry is seeing, what fishermen are seeing are healthy stocks that aren't even on our science or management radar because they haven't been seen previously in our waters.
Mr. Salerno.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I would have to amend Mr. Tracy's comment of it seems like we might be there. I honestly have to say that after the past couple days, for some of our stocks, I honestly believe we are already there. And you know, if you're looking out another 20 years, I don't see it getting much better. Unfortunately, I do see this getting worse. And even with Mitz and Penny saying new stocks coming into this region, I still have concerns that our science is not going to be able to, and our management process is not going to be able to adapt moving forward. I hate to be the Debbie Downer, but that's just kind of how I feel, you know, moving forward under climate scenario change. Thank you.
Ms. Etri.
I mean, the last few days, I feel like I have a compound stress fracture, so I'm not sure how constructive I will be to this discussion, but where I'm struggling is projecting out into 2024. I think all of this in part stems back to whether or not we have a legal structure that is designed to have us adjust to the impacts of climate change, or if it's the same structure we have now that pretty much ties our hands behind our backs with interpretations. And like, I'm not trying to turn this into any type of criticism of our current laws, but I guess, how do you factor into, like, government steps in to save a few domestic fisheries? Well, you know, unless we have a federal law that creates more flexibility to step in and save a few fisheries. Like, I guess I'm just not seeing how these scenario descriptions or how the current laws and their potential evolution to adjust to climate change. I'm rambling, I guess. I can't see it. But like I said, I have a compound stress fracture, so I'm probably not the best person. But I feel like that's kind of where I'm stuck on this, because the scenarios make sense, but to me, it's really predicated not just on where climate change takes us and where science takes us, but where our current legal frameworks take us and whether it allows us to actually address any of this.
Yeah. Thank you. And I'm sorry about the compound stress fracture. In many ways, what we're trying to do with scenarios is in some ways create reactions like that and say, all we're doing at the moment is suggesting circumstances that may play out. And then a reaction may well be, do we have the tools and the approaches to be able to cope with this? And so if the reaction then is we don't, then the next question is, so what do we do about it? So in some ways, and we're at the stage in the process at the moment where all I'm doing is explaining the scenarios. And then from there, we'll go on later on today and obviously in the weeks and months ahead to talk about what do we do. And so both later in this conversation and then in the weeks ahead, that's where we're going with it. Yeah, okay.
And don't be afraid to jump all the way to 2042. It's not 24, it's 42. So, Mr. Smith.
Yeah, scenario for two years from now. So I guess to follow up on Libby's comment regarding whether the law will allow us to do some of the things we need to, I'm also thinking about some of the previous comments around our assessment methodologies and whether the assessments are going to be able to keep up. And I share some of those concerns, particularly if the assumption is we're going to keep doing assessments and surveys the way we've been doing them. And if the operating assumption is we're just going to keep doing it the way we have been, but everything's changing really fast, I share the concern that we're not going to be able to keep up. But I would like to think that over the next 20 years, we can develop some new and innovative ways to do our assessments and our surveys, and whether it's acoustic surveys or using fishermen's observations and study fleets more. I'm trying to think about this with a mind towards innovating on how we're doing things now rather than just sitting in a headspace of we're going to keep doing it the way we do it now, but everything's going to change around us. So maybe I have a little bit more optimism that the science might be able to keep up than others do, but time will tell.
Thank you.
Oh, on the left. Ms. Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the second bite of the apple for me. Nice to see you again. Compound stress fractures, I'm like Libby. Meltdowns happen all the time. But something just recently came about in a conversation that I have had with EPA and NOAA Fisheries in regards to power plant. And I guess what I'm trying to get at here is it's a constant changing and challenging thought process in everything we do, not just in the fisheries, but in our protection of fisheries and habitats and such. So we're dealing with a power plant that's pulling ocean water in to cool, and then sending ocean water, the water back out warm. Well, now it's pulling in warmer waters, not cooling as much, and going out warmer. So all of these additive issues are things that we're not even thinking about. And will come up and slap us across the face that we hadn't thought about. And I'm finding that a little disruptive in all of our processes that we're trying to stay ahead of. I agree that with Mr. Smith, it's hard to even envision all that we need to right now in addressing what's going to happen in the future. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, seeing no other hands, Mr. Belavance, go right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Starr, for your presentation. Just reading this, I was wondering if there was any thought given to like a management response and how it might be a scenario where we would start to try to grapple with some of these really difficult problems by creating more and more complicated management processes and issues and things and solutions to these problems, and that and how that would fit in to at least this scenario, maybe even some of the other ones. But was there any conversation given to kind of like the impacts of creating a really, really complicated system too as a negative?
So yes, in the manager sessions, there was conversation about what happens when things get more complicated. Do we react with a more complicated system, or do we react somehow with trying to find simpler rules? And that's part of the next conversation that we'll have here. But yes, it was very much part of the conversation that we had with managers.
Mr. Pierdnak.
Thank you. I participated in each one of these sessions, and one thing that I found for New England, we're the recipient of many stocks that have moved up into our area, and we've seen the shift over time from the Mid-Atlantic to up here. And you know, the councils didn't have as many examples where they've seen that taking place. So you know, I just want to point that out, that it pointed out earlier, but we're already seeing it and seeing that shift, and we've had examples of that the past few days. In relation to Ms. Patterson's observation, and we'll learn a little bit more about that tomorrow with the ecosystem-based fishery management sessions that we attended in Denver. The Caribbean Council are looking at three different islands in Puerto Rico, and they're taking into consideration the impacts of contaminated surface water runoff and contaminants from sewage and so on, and the impact on water quality. So the extent in which you take ecosystem-based fishery management and implement those principles and how it impacts the stocks will determine where it takes place. You know, under the present setting, the Georges Bank includes the islands, and those islands could have impacts from people or surface water runoff or so on that could impact our water bodies and fish and game and so on, but whether that will be included or not. I just point that out because as Alan pointed out, there's all different in-betweens of what you can do that the different councils are doing, from management strategy evaluations, the hazard control rule, harvest control rules, to different ways and approaches that you can look at this and how far you want to go. So I see that as the biggest challenge of where do you start, how far do you go. But we already do have indications of increased temperatures, shifting stocks. You've heard it from me more than once. Fish are arriving sooner, they're leaving later, and they're staying and being found in places we haven't historically found them before. And how we then get that to correspond to the surveys to have the timing and location be conducted to be representative of what we see in the water, that's what's difficult. I think we have the mechanisms in place. It's just that they run at glacial speed, but maybe that's a bad example because our glaciers are melting like crazy right now, but that can slow things down. But I think the ability's there. It's just a matter of what you pull from in order to make it happen, and what you then take into consideration with water temperature, with various factors, to come to a decision to assess the stock. So I'm looking at this with a positive view in hopes that we will go in the right direction, and I believe we will, but it's going to take a lot of work, and it's going to take a lot of time, and it's going to take which is one of the reasons why this is being done. It's going to take the minds of everyone on the coast and throughout to try to get this to go right. But I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mike. So with that, I think we're going to move on to the next scenario.
Okay. Mr. Chair, thanks very much. Let me make just briefly two comments here. So one of them being, many of you and understandably have reacted to this and saying, I recognize this or I don't. Just to let you know that at the end of this part of the kind of conversation, I'm going to ask each of you to vote basically on which of these scenarios feels most like today, and which of them feels like it's, which one would you predict is likely to be playing out by 2042? So there's no, you know, this is just a kind of informal straw poll, but just to let you know that we'll be doing that. The other thing I'll say is that, again, it's great to get these comments, and we'll continue to have those comments about the kind of the actions and what we do as a result. Right at this stage, I want to try and focus a little more on just if there's any comments about the scenarios themselves, then we'll talk about the actions. Okay, so sweet and sour, as we go through this matrix, locate this in the lower right-hand corner. So here, we're still in a world of declining stocks, but now we're in a world where maybe the environmental changes aren't as disruptive, and or maybe we've got science that has moved in a particular direction so that we're now feeling a little more confident about the assessment, about predictions, and so on. So this scenario is best summed up as the science is good, but the news is bad. So we might imagine in this world, not for every species, but certainly for, let's say, the balance, declining productivity and abundance, maybe smaller maximum fish size, because we've got challenges, you know, in a number of different ways, maybe in habitat as well. Range shifts happening, as they are in every scenario, species moving north and east. So the sweet and sour also here refers to maybe the way in which we're seeing reactions. Some places, challenges are addressed through improved forecasts and different aspects of fishing community innovation, and maybe some successful adaptation to catch limits, reduce catch limits and new stocks, supplying limited but lucrative markets. At the same time, some regions struggling to develop effective responses to challenges, leading to some of the problems that we might recognize here: fleet consolidation, loss of markets, permanent declines of fishing communities. We also, in this particular scenario, made a good deal about aquaculture being prevalent as a mass source of seafood. So, sweet and sour as a scenario. Any questions? Any comments, any things that you would add this stage to, let's say, the kind of description of the scenario?
To the council. I've got six of you hadn't talked yet, and I'm going to pick on one of you if somebody doesn't raise their hand. Mr. Whalen.
I was going to talk a little bit about the last one, but, you know, I've been watching over the years kind of the, you know, sciences and stock assessments, and especially environmental science, has been kind of documenting the decline, you know, of the fisheries, and they haven't been really proactive in stepping out and getting into another kind of realm. So, you know, I think that's one way that we can kind of move forward. I mean, we seem to be caught in this this area where stock assessments, environmental studies and everything, we're just documenting the decline, but we're not doing anything about it. We're not being proactive. So that's kind of my feeling on it. I mean, the science needs to be good, you know, even if the news is bad. I mean, we have to get out in front of it. And I just think, you know, watching the council process here, that, you know, we need to take some innovative approaches about looking at our species that we're managing. And that needs to happen, you know, sooner than later, because everything is changing, and it's changing fast. And we need to move in that direction. So that's kind of my comments.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Mr. Aristad, you were next on my list anyway. Peter,
thank you, Mr. So Chairman. I decided to be proactive before I was called on. I guess I'm a little more, you know, glass half full than half empty. I can sympathize and agree with a lot of the comments made earlier about those who are currently suffering a compound stress fracture. I see a lot of reality in the sweet and sour scenario, so the one that's on the board currently. I'll leave it at that for now.
Mr. Pearnock.
He kind of stole my thunder because you're going to look for recommendations of which one. And there's like bullets here that are already here, like that some regions struggle to develop effective responses to challenges, leading to fleet consolidation, blah, blah, blah. That's already here. So it's almost like we're going to look at each slide and integrate it into one. I just point that out as your request to find whether it's the first, second, or third, but probably something in between. Thank you.
Yeah, the future's probably always going to be a combination of each of these. Yeah, without a doubt. Thank you.
Ms. Ware.
Thank you. Maybe I haven't taken my happy pill today, so this comment should be taken within context, but I find this scenario, I guess maybe to have a different opinion than the others, to be the least realistic of what may happen in 2042. And I say that because I just continue to see increases in uncertainty in our surveys or decreases in port sampling, or, I mean, the list goes on and on, but the uncertainty that I'm seeing on the science side just seems to be growing and growing. And I can believe the news may be bad, but I guess I'm struggling with the first part, and this is not meant to be a criticism of science. I think the world that they are operating in is continuing to get harder and harder, but I think that that's really pushing the bounds of what science in its current form is able to tell us.
Ms. Braun.
I guess nobody wants to be called on, so that's why we're doing this. But what I am noticing in this is that there's an axis missing, which is the regulatory environment, because we might know what we want to do, but we can't do it. So even if the science is good, we might not have the tools to accomplish what we want to do. I mean, look at Monkfish this morning. We all kind of knew what we wanted to do, but we were not legally allowed to do it. So I think there should be another axis on there. I mean, look at what's going on with right whales. A lot of the times, like, sometimes we don't know what we want to do. Sometimes it's really frustrating when we kind of do have an idea of what we want to do. We just aren't allowed to do it. So that's something that should be factored in.
Ms. Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think under this category, I would include winners and losers, because when we do go through the process of fisheries management in this quickly changing world, and entities or states or fisheries managers are having a hard time adjusting, and so you have this push-pull of people are losing, for an example, quota. People are gaining quota. As opposed to looking at it from half full glass, people are looking at it from a winning and losing perspective. And I think we need to address that or how to reword that, rethink that. Thanks.
Anybody else? Okay, let's move on. Oh, sorry, Mr. Penny, go ahead.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I'm just sort of just thinking about Megan Ware's comment, and, you know, that this scenario may be the least likely. And I think, you know, what I'm thinking about is the difference between the scenarios on the left and the scenarios on the right is the predictability and the certainty associated with the science. And while I fully agree that, you know, for a lot of our current assessment protocols, our current surveys, increased uncertainty, non-stationarity of the environment, all of the challenges that we're facing with wind development and other things in the ocean, our current assessment process, our current surveys are going to become less reliable and more uncertain. But there's a world of technology out there that may be available to us over the next 20 years that could completely change how we do surveys, moving away from white ships with limited days at sea and moving to other techniques that may bridge the gap between the left and the right side of this matrix. And maybe that's, you know, when we get to the part of the conversation where we're talking about what do we do if we find ourselves heading towards the lower left, maybe we work and think about, or we work with John Hare and his team, and we look for ways to bridge that gap in terms of the science, to get the science more responsive, more adaptive to changing conditions, so that we can try to move from the left to the right. And I think there's an opportunity there. There may not be much we can do about where the fish go, but there may be something that we can do about the ability of science to get out in front of some of this.
Okay, Ms. Etri, and then we're going to move on to our last quadrant.
Just thinking about what the RA just said, I can see the positive side of it. I am in the negative Nelly camp today. Where I struggle is, you know, we have an issue with port sampling, and the response is a staffing constraint, a monetary constraint. And again, it might be jumping into a future part of this dialogue. I don't see either one of those changing anytime soon, be it 2024 or 2042. Maybe more probable that we might get more money by 2042. So again, maybe I'm jumping ahead to the process where, you know, in any of these right side dynamic, there are always some ways to move forward. But I guess I'm still stuck with, without regulatory changes and I guess appropriations, I'm struggling to see how, but I don't know.
Okay, let's move along to the happy place.
All right, thank you. Very helpful comments, and in many ways the scenarios are designed to, people see different things in different scenarios, so I appreciate that. Okay, the fourth of four scenarios here, so we call this checks and balance. So this top right-hand corner, we're seeing more predictable changes, possibly tolerable conditions, more predictable kind of range expansions, range movements here, north and east. There's been activity here, better pollution reduction, habitat protection being described in this scenario, reversing habitat damage and loss. And then also, as we saw in the previous scenario, science is doing well. Capacity might boom here, developing in various different ways, effective ocean monitoring, real-time reporting, population monitoring, and so on. This is also a world where the ocean is very, very busy. That leads to competition, whether it be through aquaculture or maybe even collaboration. In a world where science is doing well and the ocean is very busy, could we imagine fishery science getting boosted here by collaborations with, you know, other players, wind energy installations as an example here. This also was a scenario where people identified that there would be challenges of access. Maybe the recreational sector is generally healthy, but gentrification creating concerns over accessibility. So again, would love to get some comments just on, if there are any comments just about the scenario itself, then what I want to do is do a kind of quick poll as to all four of the scenarios, and then we'll talk about actions from there. So first off, any comments on the description of this scenario and what you connect with around it?
To the council. Mr. Hansen, now we're down
to
two that haven't spoken.
I was
going to
be called on next, most likely, anyway. I just wish I had a crystal ball, because this whole scenario exercise would be very, very helpful if we had one, but we don't. And I can see most of the other scenarios having possible reactions. This one is the most optimistic, and I'm not an optimist. Yes, there could be better pollution reduction, but we're also going to have
and competition. We'll have wind energy installations offshore that will be robbing the wind energy that we that right now turns over the ocean and oxygenates the ocean. So is that a net gain or a net loss? I don't know. That wind is there for a reason. It has a function. You know, the wind energy installations will steal that. Science capacity could boom, and we could have monitoring, but if we don't have the tools in the toolbox to regulate it, or we don't have the crystal ball to see what's going forward, it'd be tough to react to it. I think we are a reactionary management body, and you can't react to a crystal ball because we don't have one.
Anyone else? Mr. Olszewski.
And then Ms. Griffin. Waiting, Mr. Chair, to get called on. I've been thinking about, I guess, all four scenarios, and I'm just going to kind of put all my thoughts together for the group. And when I think of compound stress fractures, and I'm going to backtrack just a little bit, and I'll get to the final one, I promise. I see this particular scenario as kind of playing out in many parts around the world right now that don't have robust fisheries management structures that we have right now. You look at some of the countries that are less developed and how they've been affected by pollution and different harvest strategies that rely on things like gear types versus single species or multi-species management. Sweet and sour, I'll quickly touch on that because I think that there's a lot of this that's playing out right now, and this I'll use the interactions, wildlife interactions between something that's very been part of my life and many of us lately, which is the right whale situation, right? We have interactions that are taking place and communities that are being affected by things that are beyond their control. It's not a lobster abundance issue. It's a right whale interaction problem. And things like aquaculture, I think we can all agree that aquaculture does have a very very distinct place in the future, but it also comes at a cost. I feel like, some of the things that this council deals with, Atlantic salmon, competing use in the ocean for aquaculture areas, onto checks and balances. I feel like this kind of fits back into some of the earlier situations where, sweet and sour. I must have skipped one. Checks and balances is the one that I think is kind of more optimistic, and I feel like as we move forward, we'll have better opportunities to monitor and enforce and avoid, I'll use opportunities like ropeless fishing, right? As science capacity booms, there will be opportunities for fishing communities to exist, but again, at another cost, and whether or not in the future that cost is mitigated through technological advances, I guess that's about it. Sorry if I rambled. Thank you.
Ms. Griffin.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. And then Mr. Smith.
So this particular scenario, I think, similarly to Mr. Hansen, you know, it's not realistic to me. It feels a little bit like everything going well all at once. I think there's a movie out, right? Everything, everywhere, all at once. It just feels like that. So that's just my general reaction to that, and I think not having my rose-colored glasses on, you know, this line about collaboration and fisheries science, it sounds great, but, I mean, there's been real problems with getting access to those. I mean, I'm in the weeds right now, but getting access to that. So it sounds great, but it's not really happening. And then I guess maybe reflecting a little bit on the previous slide where the last bullet really emphasizes aquaculture in that scenario. You know, aquaculture has its own inertia, so I'm not sure I would just emphasize it in that scenario. I mean, it's going to have a role in all of our scenarios, I think.
Mr. Smith.
Yeah, thanks. I guess I'm a little bit more half full on this than half empty. I believe a lot of the stuff in this scenario can and will happen. I think that the oceans are warming and species are shifting, but I don't think it's happening so fast that we can't detect it and respond to it if we try. You know, the first two up there, I think we're seeing it happening now. We're seeing it happen with black sea bass and squid. I mean,